Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Steve Furman. And Steve is a 40-year entrepreneur, certified scaling up coach, chief AI officer, and published author passionate about helping businesses grow and scale by 10x. With deep expertise in technology and business strategy, Steve leverages AI to optimize operations, reduce overhead, and boost productivity, all while keeping the human element at its core. A proud U.S. Marine Corps veteran, Steve thrives on discipline, structure, and teamwork. As a serial entrepreneur who has started and sold six companies, Steve brings unparalleled insight and experience to help CEOs and executive teams achieve sustainable success and unlock their true potential. I've asked him to join us here today to share with us how we can better use AI in our businesses to grow. So, Steve, thank you so much for joining us, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Daryl. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thank you for being here. And before we get into AI and businesses, that I want to know, how did you even get started? Six companies, not a lot of people even buy and sell one. So how did you get started? Is entrepreneurship like a family business or?
Yeah, it really is. I was mowing lawns. I had a newspaper route at 9, mowing lawns at 10 years old. But my father was an entrepreneur. He did floor waxing, window washing, and maintenance. And honestly, he tried to give me his business before I went in the Marine Corps, but I honestly did not want to have, be on my hands and knees doing what he did. He put six kids through school, so he did well, but I just watched him work so hard. I got the entrepreneurial spirit, but I want to do a little with my brains more if I could.
So how did you even come into business then? So you were inspired, your parents inspired you, and then what?
There's six kids and four out of six are entrepreneurs. So I think it's bred in just the family. But I got out of the Marine Corps, couldn't get a job. I did technology in the Corps. I couldn't really get a job doing anything in technology back in 1984, literally in 1984. And I basically went to work for Radio Shack Computer Center and started learning about technology as it was at the time with PCs.
Radio Shack, that's a flashback.
There's a flashback from the past. I told you, man, I've been around for a while. And then in 86, I started my own IT company. I actually went out to a law firm. They paid me cash up front. I went out and bought the parts. I built the computer. I got it running. I brought it in with VisiCalc and with Word. And we got it up and running on their desk, and he paid me. And the profit that was left over was the money that I made. And that's how the whole business got started.
So then what happened? It started raining money and the clouds parted and you were just.
Oh yeah. The sea opened up. The sea opened up and turned green and then gold dollar signs. No, not exactly. Then I basically started marketing my services. I started getting referrals. And before I knew it, it was like 10 years had gone by almost, or let's see, 2003, I started my second. I take it back. In 1998, I built an internet cafe. In 99, it went live, and in 2000, it went .com. But it was a great idea. Yogi Berra, the famous baseball player, wanted to name a sandwich called the Yogi Berra sandwich, or the Yogi Berra, and he wouldn't let me do it unless he came in and tasted it. I'm in New Jersey. His town was the next town over, so he actually came in and tasted my sandwich and sanctioned it. I don't know if that's any claim to fame, but
that's awesome.
I thought it was pretty cool. Yeah.
That is cool.
.com hit, and everybody had computers at home, and people didn't have to come play Minecraft and Mine War, or Warcraft, rather, in the cafe. They could do it from home. And then, like, time went on. I kept my IT company. I was still up and running in business. I was still servicing clients. I was growing and scaling. And in 2003, I started doing online data backup. I've always had a knack. I'm not one for tooting my horn, and you'll see over the podcast. I'm not going to be like, ooh, I'm so great. It's not my thing. But I've always had a vision to see the future of what's coming down the pike. Mm-hmm. And I'll get to that when I start talking about AI and what I think is going to happen. But I started doing online data backup and it was $40 a gig. I spent $100,000 for my first 1 terabyte license. I just paid Apple on my bill $2.99, or maybe it was $9.99 rather for 2 terabytes.
Right.
A comparison of storage pricing. So people only backed up their accounting data, but it was offsite. So in a disaster, they can restore, they can get back up and running. And that's what it really was all about. And then I started a reseller channel from there. So then I had a reseller company that I built and I started growing and scaling on. And then I started doing just this thought process of seeing the next vision of, this is great. Backing up and restoring your data is awesome. But what if you were never down? What if you never lost your data? What if you never had to actually shut down operations? You could just run, whether it's a hurricane or a flood or whatever. And I started thinking about what we call now the cloud.
Cloud, which is actually just someone else's computer, just for those that don't
Yeah,
know.
basically, yeah, the cloud is your data in a data center somewhere else, basically, and you get access to it. But back then, we didn't call it the cloud. We didn't know what the hell the cloud was. It was a data center. And so I started working with Microsoft. We built what I called BIAB, or Business in a Box, because everything's got to have an acronym. And Business in a Box was a hosted web server, hosted file server, hosted mail server, proxy server to get in and out to places. And we would replicate that to our data center. And that was great, but it was clunky because if they went down, we'd have to do one little quick switch and poof, they were back up and running and they were maybe a minute behind in their time. So it was pretty close to real time, but it wasn't 100% live real time. And we decided to scrap it, Microsoft, and it was my idea of Microsoft's cash to put it together, but we decided to scrap it. And I started thinking, I'm not the only person in the world that thinks this way. I'm smart, but I can't be that smart. And I found this company out of the UK called ThinkGrid that had built software that would allow you to spin up a server and a virtual desktop elsewhere. It happened to be in the UK at the time. So this is, wow, I found somebody else that's thinking like I'm thinking. This is great. I can use their infrastructure, spin up desktops and servers and get it all running, which I did. And we overloaded them with 400 clients. And before I knew it, everything went to a slow crawl. And my clients didn't like that. They're a little ticked off on that. So I'm like, there's got to be something better. And I started looking and I found this company in California called ThinkGrid. And not ThinkGrid, I'm sorry, Cloud Nation, which had a great name. And Robert Christian was the owner of Cloud Nation. And he really was a great engineer. But when Robert will tell you himself, I'm just not the sales guy, it's not my thing. So I really couldn't sell it. I had a bunch of clients. I needed to get off of some really bad environment that was good for the idea, but wasn't as functional because of the equipment they used. So I basically sold my backup business and I bought Cloud Nation and moved all my clients over. And that's basically the first one, two, three, six companies. And then in 2016, I merged my two companies, CompuNight Computers, my IT company of 35 years. And my cloud business, Cloud Nation, to grow and scale. I went from 3 million to 8.5 million, 12 employees to 35 employees. I'm like, this is it. I made it. This is awesome. I didn't get to, I'm here. I got a lot of cash now. Things are good. We're gonna make a lot of money. And a year later, my partners fired me. And I didn't realize at the time, but boy, I'll tell you, this is really the lessons you learn the hard way, I think, are the best lessons to learn. And they basically fired me and they tried to steal my business and steal my clients and steal my intellectual property and my cloud and everything else. And it took me 2.5 years of a lawsuit. I won, I settled, cost me a heart attack at the same time. But you know what? It's all about, I'll talk about my book later, but it's all about mindset. And I just moved on. And that's how I started and grew my IT side of my businesses. And then because of the lawsuit, I really couldn't work in the IT industry. And quite honestly, I had enough.
Done. Yeah,
It
you're good. Yeah.
is enough. We're getting older in the years. I want to be lugging equipment around and pulling wires through ceilings and climbing under people's desks and installing
Right.
desktops. So that was enough of that.
So that was a great overview. What were some of the biggest lessons, and what would your advice be to someone about to follow in your footsteps on a similar path?
I don't think I do anything differently in terms of my technical companies and my growth in that regard, except I wish I had a coach sooner in my career to guide me and help me along, because you don't know what you don't know. And I started going to the strategic coach up in Toronto under Dan Sullivan. And I learned under Dan the last 6 years I was there out of the 13 years I spent at the strategic coach. But for the first 10 years of my business, 11, 12 years of my business, I didn't have anybody guiding me. So I was flying by the seat of my pants. So the only thing I would do different is I wouldn't fly by the seat of my pants. I would get some help. And also trust your gut. There was a couple of times when I was going to go out for funding, like for the online data backup business, and I didn't do it. I didn't pursue it. I started And I don't have time for this. I got clients to service, and I really should have stayed focused, and I really should have stayed honed in on what my gut was telling me to do. So trust your gut and stay the course, and absolutely unequivocally seek help. Don't be afraid to ask for help.
That's a great tip. What about someone that's maybe starting out or struggling? Obviously, they wish they got a coach sooner, but some people starting out struggling, they maybe don't feel they have the resources for that. What would you recommend to someone in that sort of situation?
There's a ton of self-help groups out there, a lot of Facebook groups, things like that. You can get communities you can join that you can lean on and leverage. I wrote a book all about mindset called Just Get Up and Drive. You can find, I'm sure, publications out there that can help you with your mindset and adapting and overcoming. There's something called, and the book, ironic, the picture that I have on here shows a guy in a rowboat rowing towards a horizon. And behind him is the shore he left. And if you continue to row towards your goals, towards your horizon, it's called falling in the gap. But you never stop and turn around and look behind you to see how far you've come, because the shoreline's gone. He's way past the shore. There's no shore anymore. But those goals, the horizon keeps moving. So you fall into the gap when you forget to stop, turn around, and wow, celebrate those successes you've had, which gives you the motivation and the drive to continue to move forward. And the book's called Just Get Up and Drive. Drive is an acronym for determination, resilience, innovation, vigilance, and endurance. It's all about the right mindset. Adapt and overcome, as we say in the Marine Corps. If something's not working, what do? Find a way around it, over it, under it, through it.
I love that. Yeah, and I just even love the grit. That's one of my favorite words. A couple of my favorite words in the English. One is grit, and the other one is until, right? You keep going until you get there. And grit, my favorite quote, hard work is all to do when you're sick and tired from all the hard work you just finished doing. Mastery is when you do it until it becomes dull, and then you keep going until it's beautiful. And for some people, they don't get that. I always tell my daughter, it's always going to be hard before it becomes easy. So just because it's hard, don't be afraid. Just know that you're on the...
But it's so much sweeter when you get through the hardness, and it does start easier. You really appreciate it more. And to answer your question, I think people, they can read my book. It's $14. I'm just trying to sell my book. But there are a ton of books out there about innovation and just drive. All the letters of the word drive in the acronym.
Yeah, go pick up a copy of Steve's book. So it's... Get Up and Drive. Go check out his book.
Get Up and Drive on Amazon.
So let's talk about now that we're on the precipice. A lot of people are excited about the future. There's a lot happening in the world geopolitically and environmentally and socioeconomically, culturally. But what sort of specific skills or behaviors do you think are important for entrepreneurs and business owners to develop and improve?
So what I didn't say was, after I got to my lawsuit, I started my own, my seventh business, or actually my se- yeah, eighth. My seventh business was a virtual CIO, chief information officer. I know technology. After the lawsuit was over, I'm like, what am I going to do now? I got to make a living. I took a couple of years off. I can't lie, but I got bored. It's not who I am. I need to keep the mind engaged. Yep. So I started doing virtual CIO work and helping companies get the right products, the right services for the right price. And I found myself talking to them a lot about strategy, a lot about the right people, a lot about executing on their strategy and having cash and budgets. And those are really the four pillars of the scaling up coaching organization of people, the right people in the right seats, doing the right things, holding themselves accountable. Strategy. Knowing your purpose, your brand promise, your core values, being willing to hire, fire, and take a financial hit over your core values, truly innately believing in those to be core, having execution, your meeting rhythms, 13-week races, things like that, and cash, because growth sucks cash. And in a downturn, you need cash to survive it. Look at the pandemic did to companies, because they didn't have the cash to survive the lack of people coming into their businesses. So I become a certified scaling up coach, and I still have one CIO client that I still deal with. But basically, I wanted to help other business owners not struggle and go through some of the things I've done and I've lived through. Why not help them do it easier, better, faster, 10x, 10 times the speed I did it in. So I became a certified scaling up coach to help everybody else be able to grow and scale a lot faster.
And that's built around the four pillars. So it's having the right people and accountability and rhythms to support them, having the right strategy, which is purpose, brand promise, and values.
And there's more. There's knowing your right fishing hole. Yeah, there's always like what fishing hole do you fish in? Who's your right fit client?
Yep.
Staying focused, having a real good laser focus on what you're trying to accomplish and not get waylaid by a shiny object squirrel, which happens to most entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
They get squirreled out, we like to call it.
And then cash and budgets.
Yep.
I love it. I love it.
And being able to really look at your, this is scary, but so true. Most business owners, especially like smaller entrepreneurs, couldn't tell you anything about their P&L and their balance sheet. Profit, loss, and their balance sheet. Can't even read it. They have no idea what EBITDA even stands for. And what they need to do is they need to really take the time. And I'll even throw a book out there. I make no money on this book. This is from Mike McCallowitz, Profit First.
That's such a good book.
Oh, yes. It is a great book. But read Profit First. It's a small little book. It's not very big. Mike McCallowitz. It's a great book because it teaches you to take your profits and to watch your cash.
Yeah.
And make sure that you put money away to pay your taxes. And there's different bank accounts. And you'll get the hang of it when you read it. But that's a really good
book. Well, we actually made for some of our clients, we actually have a spreadsheet that we use. You give it to your CPA or someone. It's not like an automated thing, or there's some manual work involved. But the idea is that you put your income in there and you determine what. So the basic idea is, I could probably pull it up. Let me just see. So I'm just not talking out of my butt. But essentially, when you have money coming in, new business, add-on, renewal business, your profit and loss, you have two categories, operating expenses and owner's pay. And you take a percentage, which is a lot of business owners, they pay all their bills and then they take what's left over. This idea flips on its head where you pay yourself because you register your company. So it has its own credit, its own entity. It exists. And that's how it should be. In the beginning, you are your business, but ultimately at some point, like having a baby, your business needs to be a separate entity from you, which has
you
its
own.
You need
to build a business that runs without you. That's when you've succeeded.
Yeah. I've worked closely with Michael Gerber. And so you want to work on, not in the business. And so the owner's pay is something that you pay yourself a percentage. You give yourself a salary, essentially. And then the operating expenses is broken into staff, taxes, interest, bills, research and development. And you try to...
G&A, your cost of goods sold, everything else. Sure.
Yeah. So you try to, from the beginning, you might just take what is, but then you can set goals for each knob, so to speak. What percentage is it and what do I want it to be? And for the owner's pay, I like to recommend people do the good old Jim Rohn 70-10-10-10, which is you live on 70%, and that's even where you take your savings from. And then 10% is active capital, where you actively spend it to increase your ability to earn. So you pay for a coach, you pay for training, you buy tools. Passive, 10% is passive, where you're investing it, hoping you make an ROI, you're buying Bitcoin, you're whatever, you're on Kiva, you're doing something where you're putting the money you've got, putting it somewhere, hoping that it'll maintain and grow in value. And then 10% is for charity. And that's Jim Rohn, the 70-10-10-10 plan. So I think that's
a great
recommendation.
Yeah. It really is a great plan. The secret is, and you obviously get it, you have to understand it first.
Yes.
So read the Mike McCallowitz book. It's worth the time and effort. Yeah. And I'm a big Gerber friend myself. He's a smart man.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't manage it, or if you don't measure it, you can't manage it. And if you can't manage it, you can't grow or fix it. So it's really important. So how does AI come into this at this point? What's so funny? Because right out, I this is your interview, but I'm going to go on a 30-second rant here. My wife and I both have agencies and do different things, but one of her clients had some big announcement. They wanted everyone, even vendors, to show up to this call. And there was this big announcement that they were making this AI SEO tool. And it was like a 3-hour meeting and stuff. And she finishes the call and she comes. I'm like, how was the call? She's, Daryl, you built this last year. This is their groundbreaking AI tool that's going to do this. She's like, you built this last year. Theirs is going to have a nicer user interface but you already built this. And right before this interview call, I was talking with another client, a company actually I'm a partner in. And one of the other partners said, guys, we really need to take AI seriously. And I was, it's funny because when we started, I sent him a screenshot. I was like, because I talked about how we're already using AI. And I'm like, we're using AI this way and that way and this. And I'm like, some of it is hype and some of it is a genuine improvement. And at the end of the day, they're just tools. But I'm curious to hear.
Are they just tools? That's a great question.
Oh, they're definitely tools. They're definitely.
Some of them are tools, but I'm going to mention a book to you that I'm going to tell you should read. The AI-Driven Leader by Jeff Woods, G-E-O-F Woods. And what Jeff Woods teaches in his book is how to use AI as a thought partner.
Yes.
So AI is a tool. There are plenty of tools. I can create you a song in 3 words of a prompt using Suno.
Right.
I can create you 11 labs. I can speak in 19,000 different languages using HeyGen and 11 labs for my voice.
Right.
I can do all kinds of cool stuff. Smoking beers, it's all great. But those tools don't have an application or a problem that they're solving. Who cares at the end of the day? So I got certified as a chief AI officer for a couple of reasons. A, like you, I started doing AI stuff before AI was AI. In 2023, I started using AI for my coaching clients. Because I would get, let's say, 6 DISC reports, modus operandi, how people think, how they function, who they are, if for those of you that don't know what a DISC report is. I would take 6 executives' DISC reports. I'd load it into ChatGPT, and I would say, please analyze this.
Yeah.
And then I would ask the questions. Tell me who would get along, who wouldn't. How functional or dysfunctional is this team? Tell me where you see, because this is really big. Where blind spots are is huge because AI has the advent of 40 million books, which you and I have never read and will never read in our entire lives because I don't think it's possible. Maybe, I don't know, to get downloaded in our head.
Sure.
Who knows?
Johnny
but
Mnemonic.
40 million books and the whole internet worth of knowledge.
Yep.
So why not use it as your thought partner? Ask it to ask you questions. So it'd say something like, I'll use Chat or Claude or Perplexity or whatever your flavor is for whatever the issue is. But, and this is from the Jeff, the AI Driven Leader book from Jeff Woods. I want you to act as my thought partner. I want you to ask me questions one at a time on the subject of creating a vision summary. I don't know. Creating AI in the workplace. Whatever it is, your flavor. How to route trucks better. Whatever it is. Okay. And then tell it, ask me one question at a time. Until you get enough information to give me a summary and give me a report or give me an output of whatever. There's 3 rules in AI that you need to know about. Role, context, and output. So the role is, I want you to act as my thought partner. Use your brain, use your AI brain. Context is what I'm trying to get out of you. And then the output is how I want to receive it. And it's amazing. It'll go through, if let's say we'll use chat for the example. It'll go through and ask you questions. And if it doesn't get enough information, it'll keep asking you questions. At any time, at least I write in mine when I write my GPTs, and any time I write the word stop. So if I say the word stop, it'll stop at that point and then give me the summary. Because maybe it's giving me too much information or more than I really need at the time. Because sometimes it's a little too smart.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, I started using it for my own clients. I was looking at Cashflow Story. And Cashflow Story is a program that is scaling up we use to help us understand your cash flow over the last 3 or 4 years and look at trends. And there's 7 levers that you can adjust by a small percentage. And a small percentage of, let's say, raise your rates by 1% hits the bottom line big time, raising your prices. Or lowering your cost of goods sold, again, goes right to the bottom line. But if you increase your pricing, and then that means then you also increase your sales volume, your cost of goods sold is going to go up.
Yep.
Your work in progress is going to go up. So you may or may not get the benefit you're looking for. So these 7 levers give us the opportunity to look at cash flowing, playing with your cash to see what you could do to increase your return on investment and do better and be more profitable and what you should or shouldn't increase.
Right.
Or maybe reduce your AR by 5 days or 7 days and by 10 or 15 days can be a huge number at the bottom. Exactly.
Yep.
So the moral of the story is that's great. And that gives me great information, but I took a cash flow story and put it into ChatGPT, and now I can ask it individual questions.
Yep.
Like, why did this company lose money in the third quarter?
Yep.
Why are they netting 5.9% in the third year when they were netting 15.5% in the second and first year? What changed? What's new? What's different? So, in other words, AI enables you to go in and be curious and ask questions that software or whatever program or whatever product you're using isn't going to give you.
Yeah, I
And
agree
that's what I
wholeheartedly.
saw.
Sorry.
But that's when I saw the light. Wow, this is going to be big. This is powerful. And then the chief AI officer.com came through scaling up community. And I met Chris Daigle, who's the CEO of the company. And man, I feel like a kid in a candy store. Like it's 1986 all over again. And I found this whole new technology called computers, and the internet came in the 90s. But yeah, I feel like a kid all over again. I really do. I am loving what I'm doing with AI.
Yeah, I agree. I read it somewhere. It was like AI, what is it? What the assembly line did for manufacturing is what AI is doing for thought. Like,
But the assembly line did automation.
what the assembly line did for automation and manufacturing is what AI is doing for office and knowledge workers. And I think that
Here's the
that's.
best part. So many people out there, and I'm talking to all of you who are listening, are scared to death it's going to take their jobs. And I will not lie to you. There are some jobs that are going to go away just because it's not a good use of a human to do those jobs. That's just the reality. Replace humans. Humans who know AI will replace humans who don't upskill themselves on use of AI.
Oh,
So
100%.
start to embrace it, start to play with it. Here's the best part. You can't break it. Just ask anything you want, it's not going to blow up. And I'll tell you something else. You don't need to be technical to use AI. Generative AI or ChatGPT, GPT stands for Generative Predictive Text. That means it's going to predict the next thing that's going to happen, or it's going to come up with the prediction of it because it runs the models in millions of a second and figures it all out. But if you are a writer or a good communicator, or you're just really good at having a conversation with it, you're going to get some of the best output from it.
And
Better than the tech nerd.
you can even ask it and say, this is my desired outcome. What do I need to ask you to help me achieve? So there's a lot of different, but to go back to your point about people being replaced, the people have been doomers have been doomers, not B, D, doomers have been sounding the alarm. And there's movies like Terminator and stuff about the robots replacing us. Since it's my podcast, nobody really asked me, but my point of view on this is that it's really all just
What's your
tools.
point of view?
Since tractors came out, now we're not going to need farmers. Calculators come out, now we're not going to need bookkeepers and accountants. Spreadsheets come
Computers
out,
came out. We won't need anybody.
we're not going to need anybody. Like, it just comes down, it's almost like Adam Smith and Wealth of Nations about the division of labor, that if one person, and I think he's talking about making pins, that if one person were to work on making pins, you could only produce maybe 40 pins a day, but a team of four people can do 10,000 pins because of specialization and of economy of scale, essentially, in a specific task. And when someone is taken, when you take a multi-step task and you break it down into simple components, that the natural inclination for leisure and relaxed pace of work, the people focused on that spot will find ways to create machinery and equipment to provide, to produce scale and allow them to earn more for what they're doing. And so it's the whole thing is that everybody earns more, everyone's producing more. And so jobs are going to be replaced. But it's like when spreadsheets came out, when spreadsheets and calculators came out, the shitty accountants got replaced and the productive ones became more productive. And the people in the middle had to choose, do I go get retrained for something different or do I double down and become an expert at this? And
Yeah,
that's,
it's the same thing with AI, the same exact thing. The smart ones are going to learn it, they're going to upskill themselves, and they're going to benefit from it.
And as far as the whole debate, and I might be wrong, but the whole debate, this is a new insight. The whole debate about AGI, there's a great book called The Beginning of Infinity written by David Deutsch, who's the godfather of quantum computing. And his whole thing is that there's lots of emergent properties. So emergent is, we can calculate the temperature at which water will boil, but we can't predict where the how many bubbles there will be and where they will go. But we know the end result. And so this concept of AGI is that we never really know if we've just created something with emergent properties that fools us or if it's really intelligence until we can articulately, specifically map out how to create the intelligence. For me, is that I learned last year that at the moment of conception between a sperm and the egg, there is a flash of light. There's multiple flashes of light. Like inside the woman's womb, there's all these videos that you can find online of all these fertility clinics when the sperm and the egg meet, there is a flash of light, which blew my mind because that is literally the spark of life. And you hear about like your inner spark. Like to me, that's like they say all science stands on one miracle. Give me the Big Bang and I'll explain away everything else. And I grew up in a house of
I never knew that. That's pretty interesting.
I grew up in a house of hard science. The man that raised me was worked in physics, applied physics and geology. So I'm very into science. But that whole that spark of life thing. And until we figure out how to create that spark of life, I'm like, okay, it's just gonna be a really intelligent tool. And that's what makes a difference to me. And anybody
well,
can
that's
figure that.
Happening. Dude, it's happening. And you are like spot on because they're talking about these AI agents.
Yep.
But really they should be talking about agentic, the agentic age, because that's where really it takes the AI agent and it turns it into something that can think on its own autonomously.
Right.
It doesn't have to go back to the large language model to get information.
Right.
It can autonomously reason, not completely reason yet, but it's heading there,
right?
And think on its own. It's not going to take over us. I totally agree with you. I think that's all bullshit and plain English. But
right.
Reality is, there the agentic model is going to be a lot faster, a lot better, a lot smarter. And
Oh,
what
yeah.
we're using today is the worst it's ever going to be.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And that's just the reality. It's just the reality. So why not embrace it? I'm 100% in. I am in AI. As a chief AI officer, I help clients by training them, upskilling their employees. I get the CEOs and the executives on board to understand the benefits of it. Then I help them understand how it can help them.
Right.
And then I teach them how to be self-sufficient so they can then, moving forward, help themselves get more help. Because you can just go to any AI, generative AI product and just say, so tell me, if I'm a 4PL logistics coordinator, tell me how I can best route traffic in and out of my warehouses, and it'll tell you.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll tell you explicitly. It'll tell you what apps to use, how to use them, how to set it up. You just got to think in AI a little bit, but use it as a thought leader, as
Yeah.
a thought.
And I think it's going to be a generation of workers. It's almost like the Uber phenomenon. There's teams of humans that are, it's also like Gmail. There's 40 engineers that are programming Gmail, and then there's a billion people using Gmail. The same thing with Uber. There's 40 engineers programming Uber, and then there's tens of thousands of drivers being told what to do and what side do you want to be on. Both. It's not, there's, we need everybody, but you get to choose. You don't have to just
but think about the power of something that's so intelligent in such a speed of light or faster that can reroute all those trucks. Take a food delivery service. How do you think Uber, or take an Uber? We use them for a great example. Think about routing of traffic.
Yep.
You tie in a Waze or some sort of mapping type product to an Uber product, which is what they've done, to have people communicate and say, hey, I need to be picked up from here and go to there. In a matter of seconds, it looks at all the different traffic patterns of what's going on and reroutes people.
Yep.
And also figures out how many vehicles they'll need in a particular area based off of history and data and information from the past.
Yeah.
It's not rocket science, but man, it's pretty damn smart.
Yeah. There's a couple of things. I got a question I want to get out of the way, but I also want to talk about, and it's great at condensing and analyzing data. I think the human advantage right now is we're the ones that create new knowledge. That part. We're
Yeah,
the
these
ones
machines only know what they know.
That's yeah. And that's those that like the idea of coming up like Galileo, who actually just proved what somebody else had theorized, but he figured out how to prove that the Earth wasn't the middle of the universe, so to speak. And it was based off the phases of Pluto by doing the geometry and trying to figure out, okay, the ball of light is at this angle and I'm standing here and this is the expected circumference of the Earth. You have a very specific explanation that explains that. And that's an idea that would AI tell us that sort of thing? You know what I'm saying? Is it creating new knowledge? Is it
AI
discovering
only
it?
knows what it's been told. And a
Right.
little fair warning, everyone, when you're using chat or you're using Claude or Copilot or Gemini, pick your flavor of general AI product.
Or use
When
them
you,
all and compare.
okay, or and, but when you use any of them or all of them, you're sharing your data with the large language model. You're sharing your information with them. So if you upload a spreadsheet, that data is going out to the large language model to be used for anything. Read the EULA. Nobody ever reads the end user license agreement, but it's going out.
Right.
So what I would caution you is if you're going to start using it in your business, think about ethics and think about governance and have large language model that's privately owned. So you can have your own enterprise large language model that stores the data locally to you only and accessed by you and your company only. You can still talk to the rest of the world. It'll still go out and grab information, but nothing you put in gets leaked out.
Yeah, that's a really important
AI officer
data
on how
privacy.
To
Huge. Yep.
Yeah, data privacy is huge, and people aren't. It's good and it's bad. You know, you got this great technology, and everyone's like using it. Go, wow, look what it's doing! Oh, let me load all my stuff in there, and I'm thinking to myself, stop!
Yeah.
Don't load anything,
Yeah.
Because who's watching? You
Yep.
don't know who's been using that data against you.
Yep. Yeah. This is a bit of a, since we're talking about creating superhuman capabilities, we're already cyborgs, right? Like we're not talking in physical presence, real time, where I'm using a mic and a laptop. And so we're already cyborgs to a certain extent. And we think about exponentially growing superhuman capabilities. Peter Thiel made this great comment in an interview he did about the whole UFO, non-human intelligence, extraterrestrial thing, where if you think someone had a million years more advanced than us and they've got capabilities to, like, wormholes we'll take as an example, they can manifest and appear anywhere they want. With that sort of power, you have two potentially types of civilizations. You have one that is so purely altruistic they would be like angels.
Yeah.
And you have another one where with that power there's no defense. You could open up a portal essentially and drop a nuclear bomb anywhere, anytime. There'd be no counterattack to that. So instead, it would have to have such draconian, totalitarian controls clamped down on everyone to guarantee that sort of thing doesn't happen. Every second, every moment, every minute of your life would be under control to prevent you from using this power for nefarious purposes.
That would almost be the Terminator effect.
And so it's really cool because you get this angels and demons dichotomy where, anyways, I thought that was cool.
Well, the good news is that the AI has not figured out how to reason yet. AI has not figured out how to function like a human brain. Who am I to say that will or won't ever happen? I don't think that'll ever happen. But you know what? Who knows? All I know is you've got the time that God has given you on this earth to make the best of it.
Yeah.
So
I
am personally trying to improve people's lives through the use of technology. And that happens to be the use of AI and doing the best I can to coach and to guide people to make good decisions and to do the right things with their business, their companies, and their people. And it's really all centered around people. Everything is always around the people.
So how do we use AI to grow sales?
There's lots of ways. You can set different automatic social media prompts that go out. You can set automated blogs. Like, for instance, so I do a lot of blogging. I do videos. I do social media posting. You can set it up automatically like I've done to do it for you. I do what's called 10-80-10. 10% my ideas. 80% I let AI do the work and the bulk of it. And 10% I humanize it. Make sure that it makes sense. I check it. Always keep a human in the loop.
Mm-hmm.
The key. I don't care what you're doing, but you really want to have a human in the loop. At some point, you can get it to where it's 100% can run autonomously, and that's great. But you really want to keep a human in the loop for a while to make sure everything's working right. And every so often, spot check it to make sure it hasn't gone awry because things happen.
Yeah, that's important because machines can't go to jail. But
and
if
they
you
can't
program
think,
a
so
robot,
they're just going to do.
Yeah. If you program a robot to seek and destroy every chimpanzee it comes across and there's no human there, it's just going to run until the battery runs out. So that's really important. All right. You're talking about using AI for some of the marketing processes. What are some of the other ways that you found that AI is really helpful in terms of generating leads and even closing deals?
That's the one everybody wants to find out, how to make money and how to make it quick and easy. And the reality is that it's like anything else. AI can augment your marketing efforts, but marketing still has to be done with the human touch. That's just all there is to it. We are a set of creatures that like to interact with each other. That's who we are, and that's how we were built. But some of the things you can do is you can have it write scripts, You can have it do test marketing, test A and B marketing for you. You can have it create landing pages. You can have it create offer docs. I've got some GPTs that will, can I show my screen on this thing?
Sure, you can. For those that can see, you go ahead and take a look. For those that can't, make sure, let's talk through, try to make sure that.
Yeah, I will try and verbalize what you're seeing so that this way you get it too. So let me just share my screen for a minute. So you'll notice on the left side of my screen, I'm in ChatGPT, but I have TrustGPT or OfferDoc or Optimize Prompt or Build a Business or New AI. So here's, this is a fun one, New to AI. I wrote a prompt that's very simple, and I'll show you the code behind it. There's nothing special here. In the instructions, I basically told it, I gave it a role. I am new at using AI, and I don't understand what it could do for me. I'd like you to interview me by asking me one question at a time to help me identify relatable ways I can leverage AI at work. Ask me for my industry, colon. Ask me for my job role at my company, colon. Ask me for my current work challenges are. Again, that's a question mark. And once you get all the answers, start the interview. I'm going to add one thing I didn't do to this one. If I say, stop, please do, and create a summary page. All right, so we'll run it. And I just made a live, we're talking, this is about as live as it gets.
Yep.
And how can I leverage AI at work? Updated. So it's going to ask me a question. Okay, let's figure out, I'll ask you some questions. What industry do you work in? I'm going to say coaching. And it says, great, coaching, such a meaningful, dynamic field. What is your specific role in coaching? I am a certified business coach. I could have said I was an AI guy, but I'm going to do something different. All right, great. The next question says, what are your biggest challenges right now at work as a business coach? Getting clients. Will address you, your question. Getting clients, and it comes back and it says, thanks for finding that. Attracting clients is a common challenge. Lead generation outreach. It's already doing by summary, but this is a quick one. So it said, AI could be a game changer here. Let me suggest a few tailored ways AI can help you with a client acquisition. Lead generation and outreach, AI-powered networking tools, AI chatbots, marketing and content creation, content writing tools, video podcast assistance, websites, SEO optimization, client targeted landing pages, personalized and CRM tools. Do any of these sound like something you would like to dive deeper into? And then I can start iterating it. So yep. You talk to it, you get some responses back and forth, and then you iterate and iterate, and you end up at the end result you're looking for. So I'm going to save this one because I like my line I added, but I want to show you one other one. Why not? Might as well view. No, I don't want to do that. Get out of here. Go back. All right, so I'm going to go back to my list. And these are only some of the ones that you're seeing here. I have a bunch more hidden. But let's say a TrustGPT. So I have told my chat who am I, who I am, what I do, and everything else. And if I was to ask it to tell me about me, I'll tell you what it says about me. And it's funny. I'll show you that one. But these are right. I'll do write two posts, for instance. So this is a trust authority post, and basically I've told it to study my writing style, to learn about me and who my target audience is.
People that don't know, he's created his own little GPTs, they're called, where you basically have a template prompt that everything starts with. Instead of having to write the same thing over and over again, you can just click a button and then get started. And so you've already loaded your context into it.
Yes. Exactly. So I'm telling you to create me a post. So here's the first one. The three filters for better team alignment. Now, it's thinking in the terms of coaching because it is, I'm a scaling up coach. Right. So it says, is your team truly aligned or just busy? Problem. Most CEOs think alignment is a meeting or strategy session. It's not. Misalignment shows up in subtle ways. Key priorities aren't met because no one owns them. Communication feels reactive, not proactive. Talent turnover rises because roles lack clarity. That's just one post. Another post, from chaos to clarity in hiring. And it would continue to write them as many as I need. But it does that because I've given it the instruction of what to do. So that's how you can help yourself in marketing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's powerful. You can use this to help put proposals together. You can help it, like you said, to do more personalized, segmented, where it might be time and cost prohibitive to make a dedicated page. If you find you've got five types of avatars, or even if it's one type of avatar, but there's three, four different types of personalities or key issues that they face, you can really get granular to them and use it at every step of the way. So it really is like a
We don't have
companion.
enough time to really dive in, but be curious, ask it questions. You know, think. When I say think in AI, I don't want you to think like a robot. I want you to think, what information do I have to give it so the machine can give me back the info I'm looking for? That's why I say think in AI.
Yeah, I love that. See, this has been great. Like you said, there's not enough to fit into one call. If people want to reach out, if they want to learn more, if they want to follow so they can learn more, what are some of the best ways for them to get in touch?
They can go to my website, dot the number four, pillarcoach.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn. I do also have a link tree, but really the best way is just go on LinkedIn. All my contact info is there. Look me
Beautiful.
up, Steve Furman or Four Pillar Coach, either one you'll find me.
Yeah. All right. So go check out 4pillarcoach.com. That's the number 4PILARCOACH.com. You can also go check out his book, Just Get Up and Drive, or check him out on LinkedIn, Steve Furman, STEVEFERMAN. Steve, this has been a great call. I've got a couple pages of notes. I think it's very valuable for people to help prepare them for the future. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
I don't think so, except for what I do it all over again. And absolutely, it's been a great ride. I've really learned a lot, man. Just all of it's been just great. Being able to give back and help people has been awesome. The one thing I will say is, you don't know how somebody's doing until you ask them. So reach out and just call somebody and ask them how they're doing.
It's powerful. It's powerful. Steve, thank you so much for joining us today. I'd love to have you back in a few months because AI is developing so fast to learn what's new and exciting. Thank you again for sharing your time, energy, and insights with us. It's been an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Sarah. I appreciate you, man.